Hi, everyone, and welcome into another off-season edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Here on Crack Sidewalks, Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you today. Phil, today we're going to go through the schedule, we're going to maybe talk a little recruiting, and we may or may not freak out about some Twitter pictures of players whose arms are in a sling.
Well, at least they're not in boots, so we can't totally freak out, just partially freak out.
Yeah, maybe slings will be the new boots. I once joked that, you know, the Marquette Golden Eagle mascot should actually have a walking boot as part of his ensemble.
You know, that's not funny, Joe. That's not funny at all.
Because we used to have so many players. We used to have like a new player in a boot every day.
And there were often reports of so-and-so wearing a boot outside of Jimmy John's or so-and-so wearing a boot outside of the AMU. It was pretty prevalent.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Marquette Basketball's Twitter account tweeted a picture of, you know, all the players hanging out at Al's Run over
Which
the weekend.
Past Saturday.
Yeah, and among the things in the picture, you could clearly see Hanif Cheatham's arm was in a sling. And I believe the Marquette Wire, the on-campus student reporter, I forget his name, one of the reporters on campus, he said that the injury is, did report that the injury is nothing, that he's going to be fine in a few weeks. But so it was just funny that we just had a minor little, oh my gosh, what happened to Hanif Cheatham? But he's apparently fine. So
yeah,
apparently nothing to worry about there.
Again, as long as he's not in a boot, he's fine. And as you joked on Twitter, it's his right arm, so he should be just fine.
Yeah, he's a lefty.
So no worries. So anyway, so that will be the last of the great sling freak out, I think, for this podcast. I think we've covered it.
It was Andrew Goldstein, by the way, giving credit where it was due with the Marquette Wire, who reported that his arm, Hanif Cheatham's arm's fine. So
and to be totally accurate, I think he also reported initially it was a cast.
Yeah.
So
it's fair.
So you win some, you lose some.
All right, so let's move on from injury news that is not really injury news. The first thing we are going to talk about in today's show, now that we know Marquette's complete schedule, we're going to take a look at the whole thing at a glance and maybe what some of our takeaways are now that we know where Marquette is going to be and when, including all of the Big East opponents. Big news from the Big East schedule. Apparently Marquette's going to play every team twice, so we know that now, which we know every year, but... So the other thing
did,
I want to go
Josh
through
Did John Rothstein tweet about it? Did he forecast that there would be a double play round robin?
Yeah, he got that from his sources. But, you know, Phil, looking at the schedule so far, the one thing that jumps out at me is Marquette does not leave the state of Wisconsin before New Year's Day, only once. They only leave it once, and that's to go to Maui. So, you know, you don't mind leaving the state if you're going to Maui.
Yeah.
But other than that, they don't leave the state, which is fine by me, because like not only do they have all of their other games in the state of Wisconsin, they're either at home or they have the road trip to Madison, but they're also their first two Big East games are also at home, so that's right after Christmas against Xavier and then Georgetown, so they don't hit the road until January 3rd. So I guess that's one thing that just jumped out to me is very little travel aside from Maui in the first 2 months of the season.
Well, yeah, and if you look at the schedule as a whole, especially along the lines of travel and the youth of the team, I think the schedule shapes up nicely for what the team needs out of its schedule to help develop a young team, right? I mean, this is going to be a very young and inexperienced team up in the front court. The back court should have plenty of experience, but kind of getting those new pieces and new capabilities gelled are going to be critical. So staying home kind of gives you the best opportunities for that while still getting some good, I guess the Maui for RPI purposes is considered neutral court, but you know, you get some travel experience out of that. So I think overall it's a very, especially the first two games of the Big East conference play starting at home, I think is, it really helps the schedule shape nicely.
Yeah. So Harry Froelich, his first four games as a Marquette Golden Eagle, cause he won't be able to play until after the Wisconsin game. They'll all be at home. But the, you know, one thing that jumps out to me, Philip, because the last time we had a podcast, the Maui bracket had not yet come out. I think really one of the tipping points of the season as far as schedule strength is going to be the VCU game. which is the first game of the Maui Invitational for Marquette. Because if you win that game, your schedule, assuming no major upsets in the Maui Invitational, is probably going to include Wichita State, who could probably be a top 10 KenPom team, and probably either Michigan or Notre Dame. Whereas if you lose the VCU game, you're probably going to play Cal and then either LSU or Chaminade in your other games. So that's a big difference in strength of schedule, where you have Wichita State, Michigan, and or Notre Dame on the other side, and then Cal, LSU, and or Chaminade. Again, I'm assuming the favored teams win there, but I think the VCU could be a really big tipping point, depending on how the rest of the Maui bracket shapes out.
Right. Well, and VCU, I mean, not only that, but then VCU is likely, depending on how their season turns out, is likely to be a competitor for an at-large bid, right? So you got
to... Oh, yeah, they're always going to be in the mix for a tournament team. So, yeah, that's a nice win to begin with, just beating VCU. But the consequences of who you would play after that, win or lose, I think could be pretty significant if the Maui bracket holds relatively to form.
Now, what'll be interesting is, because this is the first year where they're de-emphasizing RPI, right? So, like... And strength and schedule shows up in other ways in KenPom and stuff like that. But it would, to your point, like those have, even if they're losses, do those losses to say, if you lose to say Wichita State versus a win against Cal or whatever, is it better to win easier games or is it better to lose harder games? Right. And how that shakes out in the schedule is going to be
I guess I'm not sure about the answer there. I think generally speaking, you would get rewarded for playing tougher games. Now the thing is with something like KenPom, it almost matters just to play well. Cause it's, if you're efficient, whether you win or lose almost doesn't matter in KenPom. But, you know, generally speaking, if you are efficient as a team, you win more than you lose. So that's how, you know, the highest-ranked teams on KenPom usually have very, very good records. It's just because if you're an efficient team, you're probably going to win. But win-loss record really doesn't factor into KenPom really all that much or really at all. But, yeah, like as you mentioned, there will be other factors to consider this year from the committee other than the RPI. They are going to look at some advanced metrics like KenPom this year. And I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, we probably won't even know until February or March how seriously they're going to take those things into account. But I still think, generally speaking, you want to play better teams. One, because you really get to test yourself and see how good you actually are against one of the better teams in the country like Wichita State, as opposed to just, you know, beating up on teams that you are just so far superior to athletically, like a Chaminade, where you're really probably not learning anything about your team.
Right. Well, I think the overriding, regardless of the stats and the metrics they use, I mean, one thing that's going to be very clear is record against like top 50, top 100, and you got to bank those wherever possible, right? I mean, the Big East schedule, and we'll talk about the Big East generally with regards to the schedule here in a bit, but the Big East is going to be super tough. As it usually is.
Yeah, it always is.
And so you're going to have to, you know, you can't count on collecting, oh, we're going to go get 6-7 wins in the top 100, top 50 out of the Big East, you know, and not worry about the non-conference, right? So you got to bank those non-conference wins, which on the schedule, I don't know in non-conference, Wichita State maybe is close to you know a really tough opponent, but I mean I think the non-conference schedule is certainly easier in aggregate than is the conference schedule, right? The Big East, especially top four or five teams are going to be better than the collection of teams we have in the non-conference schedule.
Well, yeah, of course there are no Eastern Illinois or Chicago States in the Big East.
DePaul.
And Georgetown, bless their hearts, uh-huh. I don't know what they're going to do this year. Georgetown might finish 10th.
We should probably apologize to Mike Broeker and the rest of the athletic department for ever questioning their non-conference schedule capabilities.
Yes.
Because Georgetown's non-conference schedule is hot garbage.
They are going to get Patrick Ewing to 10 wins somehow, man. And that's what that schedule is all about. But no, I think to be clear, I think Marquette has put together a very nice non-conference schedule this year. The Maui Invitational, there are plenty of good teams in that thing. Especially if you can get a win, get that first win against VCU, you're going to come away with a nice schedule strength boost from the Maui Invitational. Then going to Madison is always a nice addition to have to your non-conference schedule. And of course, Georgia comes to the Bradley Center. It'll be nice. I mean, you know, I'm not sure exactly how good Georgia's going to be this year, but you know, I think they're pretty far behind probably the top teams in the SEC with Kentucky and honestly probably Missouri this year. But I think there's probably a big gap after those two. But yeah, Phil, going into the, you know, into the Big East schedule, you know, I feel like it's just too easy and cliche to say it's going to be a tough schedule because it always is. But you know, Marquette does play a lot of the some of the tougher teams pretty early in this thing, because they get Xavier right off the bat. They get a what I would consider a gotta win on December 30th against Georgetown at home. Then you go to Providence, who I could be one of the top three, four, five teams in the league at the, you know, defending conference champs Nova, and then Seton Hall, then on the road to Butler. So, I mean, Marquette could really take some lumps right out of the gate in the Big East. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, about how they don't leave the state except for Maui until after New Year's Day. The downside is if you look at the end of Marquette's schedule, like let's say they do get off to a rough start, well, they're going to have to make up for the rough start on the road quite a bit, because if you look in February, they only have two home games in February, and like starting on February 7th, you're at Seton Hall, at St. John's, at Creighton. You get St. John's at home, then at DePaul, at Georgetown, and then Creighton at home.
Well, and then at DePaul, at Georgetown are really tough, because those are practically back-to-back. It's the 24th and the 26th. You know, I know, and Chicago's not that far, but still.
And while those should be, they are expected to be two of the worst teams in the league, going to DePaul is always going to scare me. I don't care if DePaul comes in, you know, 0-25. I would always be nervous going to DePaul. And then, you know, even though Georgetown, I'm not expecting much from them at all this year, I'd still be nervous about playing them on the road just because it's a road game. So especially if Marquette is struggling at that point, we'll see where they are. But five out of the last seven are on the road. So if Marquette is, like, say, a bubble team in February, they're going to have to play a lot of road games to play their way in, which certainly could be challenging, no matter who the opponent is.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting because, you know, you mentioned we could take the lumps early. You know, I think the Big East this year, and we'll get into more in-depth analysis when we get closer to Madness, but I think the Big East is basically separating into three tiers. You've got probably Nova, Seton Hall, and Providence in the top tier. Then you've got Xavier.
Xavier, I'd put them up there.
Yeah, Xavier's kind of right on that cusp for me. I mean, they've lost a lot. And maybe you would flip Xavier and Providence, but then you've also got, you know, Creighton's lost a lot, but they've got others coming in. Maybe they'll come back. Marquette's obviously in there. Butler's in that middle tier, right? Those are the teams you're competing for. Unless Marquette comes out really well, those are the teams you're competing with for fourth, fifth, and sixth. And then you've clearly got Georgetown and DePaul at the bottom, and St. John's has shown flashes, but not nearly enough consistently that I have concerns that they're on the, you know, they're coming up, that they're gonna challenge for more than seventh, maybe sixth, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Certainly, evaluating the bottom of the league, I still want to see, you know, a little more from St. John's before I put them in the middle of the pack. But I generally agree with you there. I, you know, Butler, we're going to see how they do under the new coach. Butler, you know, I probably said this when Brad Stevens left. I don't know how they'll do without him, but they obviously did just fine with Holtman, who is now going to go to Ohio State. So that could be just a program that just has a great culture and just keeps finding good coaches that fit what they want to do. And the new coach there, Jordan, right?
Jordan.
The guy that... Yeah, we'll see how he does. But, you know, he's a guy who's been in the Butler program and a guy they really like. So, again, maybe Butler will exceed expectations again as they did under Holtman. So I'm going to have to give them as much respect as possible for now and consider them at least as good, if not better, than Marquette for right now. And we'll see what kind of team they have this year. Villanova, since the new Big East has formed, they have pretty much dominated the Big East as much as Kansas has dominated the Big 12. I mean, it's like them and then everyone else playing for second, at least since the new Big East formed. Now, obviously, you know, in the old Big East, you know, they were competing with a lot of other teams for the top. But since we formed this new league, it's been Villanova far and away in first place. than everyone else pretty much playing for second. Although Butler, you know, gave them a run to beat them twice last year, but that's generally been the consensus. Villanova is the king of this league until somebody knocks them off, and I'm not sure if anybody's going to do it this year. But then I think you have quite a few teams that will be very competitive for second, third, or fourth. Like I think I put Xavier right there. Providence, I think, is on the way up. Seton Hall's got Seton Hall's got plenty of players.
They've
of course,
got they've got a lot of returning talent that was there last year.
They have experience. So, you know, the Big East is going to be a bear, and I think we're going to say that every year until the end of time. I mean, there are always going to be players in this league, and there are always going to be competitive teams. There are always probably going to be eight teams that realistically enter the season thinking they're tournament teams, and in the end, maybe five or six get in every year. So the tough thing for Marquette is, you know, they don't want to be battling in there for seventh or eighth. You know, eventually Marquette wants to get to the point where they are, where I would say you would consider Xavier is right now, like the team that's Xavier, and, you know, where Butler was last year, as the team that's right there in position to take down Nova and be the team that, like, first team to win the new Big East other than Villanova. And that's where Marquette is striving to be. I don't think they're there quite yet. I certainly don't think they get there this year, but, you know, that's where, as Wojo and his staff continue to add players, that's where they hope to be. My hope for this team is, again, just to be solidly in that middle again, and we'll see if they can be a tournament team again. But, yeah, I kind of agree with you. They're kind of in that middle of the pack of, like, one of those teams that might be battling for the last Big East spot in the tournament.
Right. Well, and I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you say, okay, there are six wins on the schedule, some combination of, you know, maybe St. John's twice, but, you know, Georgetown twice, DePaul twice, at least one St. John's, and then another, you know, another one of those mid-tier, to be tournament, you know, likely, you really need to win four or five games out of the remaining. You know, you need. I don't think the bar is going to be any lower than in, or any harder than in previous years. I think if you get 10 or 11 wins in the Big East, that'll do it. So anything's possible. I think the thing with this team, and I've seen a number of services, you know, speculating Marquette's going to be seventh or eighth in the Big East, which I think is awfully low. And I guess awfully low is not the right phrase, but I think they're five or six at worst. Right.
Yeah, I think it's fair, you know, especially if you're like we're homers, we're fans, and, you know, we consider them a team that should be in the tournament or better, or like hope they can be that every year. But I think if you're an outsider looking in at Marquette, you're probably going to pick them seventh or eighth.
Yeah, and the Big East
this year.
Go ahead.
Because there's so many unknowns. Because I don't think really anyone knows what we're going to get from Froehling or Sakar this year. And then there's just a bunch of freshmen. And so you see, you know, from the outside, you see, well, this is a team that lost Juwan Johnson, Caton Reinhart. Do they have enough coming back to be competitive in the Big East? And I think it's not unreasonable to say for most people to say, no, I don't think they have enough coming back to be competitive, and they should probably have their sights set on the NIT this year. But I think inside the program, they see it much differently. I think they see themselves as having quite a few guys who no one is outside the program really knows much about yet, and they are confident are going to contribute, like Froehling, like Sakar, and then I think a guy like Theo John is going to be ready to go from day one, especially as they wait for Froehling to be eligible. So I think, like I said, I think inside the program they see themselves as much deeper than those outside the program do.
Well, and that's the key, right? Is the talent evaluation. There was, unlike the year before with Marcus Howard coming in, there was no clear, like, oh wow, this guy's a gamer, right? On the recruits that came in, or Sam Hauser last year. There's none of those five star blue chippers, you know. But you know, we'll see when they actually get out there on the court. But I just get the sense, looking at it and having seen some highlight tapes and whatnot, I get the sense that the overall talent and the overall makeup of the team is more in line with what Wojo wants, and probably at least as good, if not a little bit better than last year, right? You get the returning players have another year under their belts of development, and you've got some talent coming in replacing players that were leaving that, you know, I don't know that we got worse anywhere talent-wise. It's just the experience factor. And you see a lot of freshmen contributing these days. I mean, that almost has to be an expectation, that freshmen are contributing. So I think we do have to put a little bit of that expectation on the young players, is that they're able to contribute to this team. Certainly by conference season, I don't think we can wait for them to take another year to develop.
Yeah, I think, again, you look at the roster, and one guy I didn't mention before that I should have is Luke Fisher, and I think most people would say, well, you lost your big man. How are you going to replace him? But I think for those of us who followed the program know that, Luke struggled a little bit last year, and in the end, I think defensively, Matt Helt was just fine back there, and you just hope his offensive game comes around a little bit, and you're hoping some that offense in the post is going to come from Froehling or maybe Theo John this year. I think the big X factor as far as where improvement can come is, and this is something a lot of people who have talked about who follow the program, is Marcus Howard is going to play more and take more shots. And if he shoots anywhere near what he did last year, 52-53% would be amazing, but even if he shoots 45% from three, but he's taking twice as many shots, I mean, that's a big difference, and that could be a lot of points for this team, and you get what you expect out of Rousey as well. Yeah, there could be plenty of offense for this team. You know, the big question for me is where will the defensive improvements come? Are any of these new faces better defenders than some of the guys who left?
Or has the coaching staff found a better way to utilize the talent they have in a scheme that works, right? I think that was one of the issues we talked about last year, was just schematically not being able to find something that worked with the collection of personnel you had to put out on the floor.
Yeah, like I think the big challenge is they need to find a way to be a decent – I'm not saying great, that's probably asking too much – but at least a decent defensive team with both Rousey and Howard out there. Because you're talking about two undersized guards who, most teams will have guards that can push them around or shoot over them. Can they come up with a way that they can at least defend well with both of those guys out there? Because the offense with both of those guys out there should be pretty exciting. And they should knock down a lot of outside shots. If you're trading threes for twos, maybe that works out fine. Maybe that's the strategy, and you're going to try to score, win games 100-98. That'll be exciting. Might be fun. Might be some blood pressure checks all season. But if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. But yeah, I'm sure the coaches watch way more tape than we do, and I'm sure that's what they've been working on in the off season. And I'll be curious to see what they've come up with to get the most out of this team defensively, while not totally getting away from what made them successful last year, and that was the outside shooting.
Right. Well, and if you take away, Wojo the GM, right, the makeup of the team last year and then this year is certainly on his account, right, especially this year because it's all his players.
Right.
But if you take the GM portion out and you just look at the personnel in the vacuum and the coaching last year, I mean, there was no doubt Wojo was actively coaching, right? I mean, I don't know how many different defensive strategies and how many different lineups and combinations and mixes he threw out there. Sometimes they were successful, sometimes not. So I think from a coaching and game management standpoint, I think we've seen evidence that Wojo can do those things. So it really comes down to, is this collection of personnel, the right combination, and B, can they develop them as players? I'm not worried about the coaching perspective. I'm worried's not the right word. I am going to be mindful of the of how the player development goes and where that talent actually is, right? So is Sakar took a year off to redshirt. Are we going to get anything out of that, or is it going to be, is Sakar going to be a major contributor, or is he going to be just a guy on the bench, right? What do we on the roster?
Yeah, those minutes left vacant by Reinhardt and Juwan Johnson, are those going to – right, yeah, and Dwayne, of course. Are those going to be obviously Dwayne Wilson's minutes are probably going to be divided up by Rousey and Howard, but, those wing players, are they – is Sakar taking those – is Sakar – is he taking those minutes, or is or is Jamal Cain the fresh? Is he a better player, and is he better suited for those minutes? And is he going to contribute? Like, you know, certainly Sam Hauser is a guy who far exceeded my expectations as far as playing time as a freshman last year, and I hope more freshmen pleasantly surprised me this year, because like the only freshman I think can contribute right away right now is Theo John, just because I think he just has a college ready body. You know, he is 6'10", and if you've seen the videos the team posts of him, you know, his workouts, he is muscular, he's big, and I think he's a guy who will be able to hold his own in the Big East pretty well for a freshman, you know, physicality wise. So that is the one freshman who I think will play and play a lot this year. The others I'm not as sure on. Either they're inexperienced, or maybe, you know, they're a little small, you know, skinny, or they're just have guys ahead of them who I think are more experienced and a little more talented. Maybe some of them surprise me and contribute right away, but yeah, the freshmen, as always, are an X factor. And last year, they were a very good X factor, because Howard and Hauser were about as good as any freshman we've seen over the last few years at Marquette.
Right. Yep. And it's going to be interesting to see how they distribute the ball on offense, right? Because if you've got Howard and you've got Rousey playing at the same time, and then potentially Sam Hauser, you know, are there going to be enough shots to go around? That also can help on the defensive end, right? Because if you, let's say Theo John, I agree, he's probably the most ready now based on what we've seen. But so from his perspective in terms of his experience, if you've got enough shooters and enough, you know, slashers in Marcus and maybe Sam, you know, and whoever takes the 3 minutes, if Hanif returns to form, right, of his freshman year, there's enough scoring there. So can you really, just from Theo John, you're asking him to play defense, defend the rim, you know, maybe set some screens. You're not asking him to do a lot offensively with the way this team is. So you can bring them along a little more slowly and deliberately, which is kind of how the schedule shapes up, right, in terms of the non-conference. That Purdue game, with the Gavitt games, is a little bit – that's going to be a real early test, a little sooner than I'd like, but that's the non-conference. And so you can – but you can kind of bring them along and get some playing time out of them.
Yeah, I mean, the freshmen are going to be thrown to the fire pretty early, because, I mean, yeah, Mount St. Mary's is a game that you should certainly win, but then you got Purdue, and then you go to Maui, where if you're winning, you're going to be playing a tough team pretty much every night. So not really until they get back from Maui, when they play Eastern Illinois and Chicago State, are you going to have those games where hopefully you are largely in control of the game and you're up double digits, and maybe you can experiment and get the freshmen some playing time and see what you have, as far as some of the guys you're not as sure of. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're going to need, whether he's ready or not, Theo's going to have to play a lot in the first few weeks of the season against Purdue and VCU and whoever they play after that in Maui, because, you know, they're not going to have Froehling, and Luke Fisher's gone, so it's not going to be held down there by himself. So they're going to need quite a bit from Theo John, and, you know, if he's ready, I haven't talked about him yet, but if, you know, Ike Ike is ready, and if they may need minutes from him as well.
Oh, I feel pretty confident they're going to need minutes, because, you know, one thing's true, almost universally true of freshmen, they have real problems with foul trouble. So yeah. You know, I could see, you know, Theo John.
As does Matt.
Right, that's true. Hopefully he's worked on that. I mean, there was a fairly significant improvement in Fisher from his junior to his senior year in that regard. Not nearly a good enough improvement, but there was improvement. So hopefully that'll get better. But yeah, early on in the season, and I think we have to be prepared, especially that Maui trip. We have to be prepared that those might be some real tough games as the players are getting in there and getting some experience that they don't have, especially in the front court.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. You know, we'll probably break down the schedule a little bit more in depth as we get closer, maybe after Marquette Madness, after we check in there and see what, you know,
actually have an idea of what the team is and what the talent is.
See if we get any insight into the rotation or starters or whatever, or anything like that. We're going to talk a little bit of recruiting before we get out of here. You know, since we last, it's been a while since we recorded this podcast. Joey Hauser committed since we last recorded, so I'm sure everyone's aware of that. Yay. Let's talk about that briefly. I mean, we talked about what a big commit he would be, Phil, in the last podcast. Now that we know he's verbally committed, I'm assuming he'll probably sign in November when he can. But that's when he'll be officially on board with Marquette. But, you know, for me, I think it's great to see the Marquette coaching staff make an in-state kid a top priority and then get him and keep him from the in-state rival up the road in Madison. And to get a guy who may one day be an NBA player, I don't know if he's necessarily a one-and-done type talent, but I think he's certainly, if you look at what people say about him and where he's rated nationally and just his skill set, he certainly has a skill set of a future professional player. And when you get a guy like that in your program and you keep him away from some of your rivals, that's always a good thing. So I think that was, you know, just kudos to the whole coaching staff for, you know, getting Joey Hauser to commit.
Well, yeah, and I think he's a game changer. If you look at it in the context of the talent on this team versus next year, I mean, there may be a bit of a log jam in the front court next year that, based on some of the recruiting discussion we're going to have here in a minute, may or may not resolve itself. But, you know, bringing on talent like that when you've already got a lot of talent is a good problem to have, right? I mean, if you've got too many really good forwards, you know, it kind of sucks a little bit, but hey, maybe it allows you to do some different things. Who knows? Maybe you can move Sam down to the one, down to the one. That's ridiculous.
That would be quite an adventure.
Yeah, that would be hearkening back to the Marcus Jackson point forward days, and I don't want to go back there. You move Sam Hauser to the three or something like that, right? And because you're bringing on talent that can now play in different areas, so it just tilts the court a little bit in Marquette's favor with that level of talent. We got to see what it is, but it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, so you know he's gonna. He's one of the more talented guys Marquette has, you know, recruited over the last few years. Of course, Ellenson, far and away the biggest, highest-rated recruit Wojo has signed so far. But who knows? That may actually change depending on where Quentin Grimes finishes in the final recruiting rankings. I'm sure those of you who follow the recruiting world have probably heard the name Quentin Grimes. We actually talked about him a little bit on the last podcast, and my attitude towards him has changed quite a bit since then. Back then, I was pretty pessimistic about Marquette's chances, just looking at the schools that were recruiting him. Kentucky, Kansas, Arizona, Texas A&M were among the schools. Well, now it's only down to four. And he has set his official visits. Marquette is one of the four, along with Texas, the hometown favorite, along with powerhouses Kentucky and Kansas. And then Marquette is scheduled to get the last visit.
Yeah, they're
you can
in
read
the
into
in,
that what you want.
Yeah, they're in the cleanup spot.
Yeah, so you can read into that what you want. Sometimes having the last visit is a good thing. Sometimes maybe not if he goes to a place like Allen Fieldhouse or Rupp Arena and just falls in love and commits on the spot, which has certainly happened before. But I have to say, you know, it's Marquette's coaching staff is in a pretty good position in that all of their scholarships for next year are filled. So they can really go all – if they want to add one more player, they can go all in on one guy for 2018. And that one guy is clearly Quentin Grimes. And, you know, who knows if they're going to get him or not. I guess we're going to find out a lot over the next month because I'm guessing after he takes all his four officials, he would probably – consider committing to one of the four maybe before his high school season really gets going in November. So the fact that he's doing all four officials before November tells me he really kind of wants to get all his information quickly and then make a decision. So we'll see what happens. But I think the Marquette coaching staff has done a heck of a job convincing a kid from Houston, Texas. This isn't like going up to, you know, Stevens Point and going all in on a hometown kid who probably sees you a lot, has a brother who's there, and, you know, is probably very familiar with the program. This is going down to Houston, Texas, where there are probably a lot of people in Houston who don't even know where Marquette University is. And to convince this kid to seriously consider your program, I think they've done a heck of a job.
Yeah, well, and it's if they don't get Grimes, it's not for lack of trying, right? I mean, a week and a half ago, Stan Johnson tweeted about them being down in Houston, and the entire coaching staff went down to Houston to talk to Quentin Grimes on a weekend visit, right? So he certainly has to be receiving the message that Marquette is very, very interested in his services and really want him. And Marquette's roster makeup, you know, like you said, they have all their scholarships filled. So if they don't get Grimes, who's a five-star prospect at point guard, if they don't get him, okay, they can go with what they've got, but they're basically saying that we think Quint Grimes is absolutely the missing piece that would make us a serious contender, right? So if you put Quint Grimes and Joey Hauser on this team next year, and then someone, you know, disappears from the roster, you know, either through their own choice or, you know, through a heartfelt discussion, however however that goes down, becomes
I will say this about that, because I know, you know, people do tend to get all worried and freaked out, and I used to be this way myself. When a team has signed all of its recruits for 1 year and then they're still recruiting others, it's like, oh, but what happens? Where does the scholarship come from? What's going to happen? Who cares? Like, you figure out that later. As they, like, you know, that stuff tends to work itself out. And two things about that: one, you don't say no to a five-star talent like Quentin Grimes if you think you have a great shot to get him. You don't say, thanks for your interest, Quentin, but we're full. You just don't pass, because, you know, Quentin Grimes would probably be one of the best players on this roster. You figure out the rest. And, you know, at the end of this year, we'll see what, you know, we will see what happens. There's always the possibility that if Marcus Howard shoots 50% from three again, he may decide he's ready for the NBA, that his stock may never be higher as a, you know, little 5'11 guard, that he probably should go get paid. But that could possibly happen. So that's one way to look at Quentin Grimes. He is one heck of an insurance policy if you lose Marcus Howard after this year. That is, that, you know, if I were to place my bets, I would guess that Howard is back as a junior. But you can't discount the fact that, you know, the NBA has such a premium on three-point shooting. If Howard has proven to be a 50% three-point shooter in 2 years of college, that some teams might say, you know what, let's take a look at this 5'11 kid and see if he fits with us. So that's a possibility. And then if Howard is back, which I would certainly, from my as a perspective as a Marquette fan, love to have him back for his junior and senior year. Well, then if somebody leaves, then somebody leaves. They'll find, maybe, you know, somebody on this team is going to finish 10th or 11th in minutes, and whoever that is may decide, you know what, maybe I'll get more playing time at another school, and maybe it works out that way. But you can't not pursue a guy like Quentin Grimes if you are in good with him and he is strongly considering your program and he could take you to another level.
Right. Well, and again, you take what you can get, and you got to, like, the bottom line is you got to win, right? And the coaching staff looks at this roster and looks at the players that are committed. They know what they are at this point. And basically what they're saying is, hey, we need, with this Quentin Grimes thing, A, he's a top flight talent. B, it's in a position of potential need in terms of point guard. There's talk that Greg Elliott might be able to play point guard, but really on next year's roster, the only one that we all feel comfortable playing point guard right now is Marcus Howard, right?
Right.
So you look at the roster makeup for next year. The coaching staff knows what talent's on the team. You have to just you gotta take the chances as they come up, right? And the goal is to win and to win big. And we're talking about this year, oh, maybe they need to take a step back, you know, the fans are saying take a step back and focus on the NIT or whatever, right? Well, you know, going all in on Quentin Grimes says, hey, you know what? No matter what this year is, next year is, we are all in, right? We're changing our roster makeup as required, and we're going to go out and play some big bets and bring the program back to national prominence. So,
yeah, if you have a coaching staff that passes on an opportunity like Quentin Grimes, then it's best to go get a coaching staff that would pursue a guy like Quentin Grimes.
Absolutely.
It's like, if you pass on five-star kids because you're committed to, you know, developing, you know, guys on your roster who are, you know, might not be as good, you know, those are the kinds of decisions that lead a coach to be out of work eventually. You take your shots and you try to get the best players. That is the job of the coaching staff, is to assemble the best team they possibly can. And ideally, Quentin Grimes would be a part of that scenario for Marquette. Opening up a new building with an experienced team next year would be, and just having, like, again, in a perfect world, that roster includes Marcus Howard and Quentin Grimes, that is a potentially very exciting scenario. And so that's why Marquette is going for Quentin Grimes. Again, you worry about the scholarship situation later. The best I can see, they are not recruiting anyone else in 2018. There are some other guys they've been recruiting and been talking to in the past, but ever since Joey Hauser committed, best I can tell, they are not committing, like, actively talking to anyone else in 2018. Certainly not visiting anyone else. Maybe they're staying in touch via text, you know, messages on Twitter, you know, and whatnot. But they are not seeing any other 2018 prospects in person other than Quentin Grimes. And I think that may be one area where they may have a slight advantage over some of the teams that are also recruiting, because obviously Kentucky and Kansas are huge names. Huge names. But, you know, Arizona signed two point guards, and that kind of eliminated them for Quentin Grimes. Like, they signed Brandon Williams and Javon Quinterly, who were two really highly touted kids. So that kind of eliminated him. Kentucky is heavily involved with a guy named Emmanuel Quickley out of Washington, D.C., who is similarly rated to Grimes. So, like, while every school is going to tell Quentin Grimes, you are our top priority, Marquette is the only one who could honestly say yes. Like, because Kansas, I know Kansas really wants, I think Quentin Grimes' mom actually went to Kansas. So, like, there's a family tie there, so I think Kansas may actually be the favorite for Grimes. But Kansas is also recruiting a point guard named Devin Dotson, who is very close friends with Zion Williamson, who, if you follow recruiting at all, you know who Zion Williamson is. He's this high-flying, amazing dunker out of South Carolina who would probably win the NBA slam dunk contest if he participated in it. He's like the number two kid in the class. Dotson and Zion Williamson may be a package deal, or at the very least, if Dotson came on, that would help them with Zion Williamson. So again, Kansas has told Grimes that he is their top priority, but Kansas is also very hot after Dotson and Williamson. Williamson's a forward, but still, Dotson's a point guard. But Marquette can honestly say, you are literally the only guy we're recruiting right now. And so I think that's one area where Marquette may have a slight advantage. If you're asking me to place my bets, I would probably put the chips on Kansas. But it's at that point, like, Quentin Grimes and Marquette for me have gone from, oh, that would be nice, oh, maybe they could possibly get a visit, so you're telling me there's a chance, oh, there's a chance now that they could actually do this. So, like they got a 1-in-4 shot right now. So they've done a heck of a job. The other schools involved, they're obviously recruiting other guys. Texas could probably also say the same. Like, Texas is probably recruiting a few other guys, but and they're the local favorite. But you know, Kentucky and Kansas are recruiting other 5-star point guards. Marquette is not. Like, so that would be one thing that I think they could pitch to Grimes. And if they do get that visit, you know, keep in mind, there's a possibility that he could visit Kentucky or Kansas and say, you know what, I don't need to take any more visits. That could happen, but if he does take that fourth visit and visit Marquette, that's one advantage of having the last visit is, you know, you can kind of turn up the pressure a little bit, you know, when the visit's over. You know, you sit him down in the office, say, you know, Quentin, well, I know you want to take all your visits, and as far as I can tell, you've taken all your visits. You've got all your information. Seems like you had a great weekend here. You know, what do you think? So you can kind of turn up the pressure a little bit and try to get that commitment on the spot. We'll see what happens. But, you know, there are a few things working in Marquette's favor, but I still am wary whenever you're going against John Calipari and Bill Self for a 5-star recruit.
Well, and, you know, to be mentioned in this group and to get it here, I think that's reflective of kind of the capabilities and the effort that that the coaching staff has, right? So that's a positive, right? We're getting in with a lot of blue chippers. Hopefully that pays off down the road as the program continues to build. You know, we could read all sorts of things into, you know, whether him going last means Marquette's in a really good position, or, you know, maybe he arranged them in order of preference, figuring that, you know, if he gets his number one and he likes it, then he can cancel the rest and take the rest of October off or whatever. So who knows? But if it does get to the mark, if he comes to Marquette for his visit, I have to say I feel very strongly about our odds, right? I think getting him in for the visit after having visited the other three, I think that is significant and means good things for Marquette. It's not a guarantee, but I think it improves those odds from the literal 1-in-4 to probably something better. He's probably eliminated one or two programs by the time he gets to Marquette, I would think.
Yeah, as our buddies at Anonymous Eagle like to say, back up the ice cream truck, going back to when Henry Ellenton was on campus and they just showed a picture of everyone getting ice cream.
Yeah. And Matt Helt hit a
Ellenton.
couple of half-court shots during summer camp this past summer, and they brought in ice cream for it. So there's apparently an ice cream fetish in the Marquette program right now. I don't totally understand.
I fully expect there to be ice cream involved in Quentin Grimes' visit, unless he doesn't like ice cream. And really, if he doesn't like ice cream, then I'm just not sure he's a good fit.
What if he's lactose intolerant?
Well, then I would understand that.
But we can't have intolerance in this program.
we certainly can't. But, you know, like Marquette's done a great job getting to this point with Grimes. You know, that's something I'm sure we'll all be following on Twitter and you know, on the message boards and whatnot over the next month or so to see, one, if that official visit does happen. You know, he announced the date, so I assume that it will. But I kind of agree with you, Phil. The fact that he's putting Marquette last is, you know, maybe it's a situation where, you know, like I said, he's taken all the other ones, and Wojo and the staff could say, hey, it's unlike, say, Shaka Smart, who's going to have to sit him down and talk him out of three more visits. Say, look, yeah, I know you've got three more scheduled, but I think you should probably commit to us, you know, because I think you're a great fit here. That's going to be the point, you know, what Shaka Smart's going to have to do with the first visit. Wojo's going to be in a position to say, hey, look, I know you wanted to take all your visits. Well, now you're done. So what do you think? And so there will be, you know, there's going to be a push for a verbal, you know, towards the end of the Marquette visit. And yeah, that's just kind of the way it's going to go. And we'll see if they get it. And who knows, he may wait till the spring. Sometimes these top recruits like to do that because they, you know, they love to wait to see if there's any coaching movement, or they wait to see
how the program turns out. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, where some of their friends who are also All-Americans end up, you know, I don't know what his relationship is like with some of the other guys in the top 25, but he may have, you know, friends who he's at least curious about where they're going to go. Maybe if say Zion Williamson ended up at Kansas, maybe he would like to go play with Zion Williamson. I don't know, but we'll see where everything else ends up with Quentin Grimes. But I think they've done a good job. Marquette's done a great job with recruiting anyway. Even if they don't get Grimes, they should be fine for next year because, like I said, they got a full complement of scholarships for next year, and they should have a full roster. And I like what they have coming back next year, assuming all the players who are scheduled to return do next year. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. Grimes would be a nice bonus. So,
yeah, well,
something
and
interesting
I was,
to follow.
Just to echo on a little bit of what you said there at the end, if they don't get Grimes, no one should be, like, devastated. Yes, I think he would be he would represent, you know, something like, all right, this team goes from maybe being a Sweet 16 team next season to potentially something more significant than that with him coming in-house, depending on who leaves. But by no means is it a devastating blow if we don't get Grimes, right?
Yeah, like for example, like if Joey Hauser had committed to Wisconsin, that would have sucked. Like you lose a guy you made a top priority to a rival. That kind of loss in recruiting stings a little bit. When you lose a five-star commit to Kentucky or Kansas, you're just like, well, that's the way it goes.
You already have a full roster, right? Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like Joey Hauser was more like a guy like, we got to get this guy because he just represents so much of what we're trying to do with the program. Recruit the top guys in state, keep them away from Wisconsin. We love the combination of Sam and Joey together. He fits the kind of player we want to have. He was just such an important recruit to get. Whereas Grimes, again, he fits the program perfectly, and he's a guy you would love to have, but he's kind of like he's a pie in the sky kind of dream for me. Like a guy that, realistically, I wasn't sure Marquette could get, and now that it's close, now it's a little bit exciting. It would be just a nice bonus, but you know, if you lose them to Kentucky or Kansas or even Texas, because you know Texas is an up and coming program, and people have called Texas a sleeping giant for years. But
well, it's a done deal with Shaka Smart.
Yeah, it is a done deal. Texas, they are a very intriguing program, especially if you're a kid who lives in the state of Texas. So if you lose them to Texas, you know, I don't think there's any shame in that either. But, you know, we'll see where that goes. But I am, you know, as October approaches, Phil, that's when I start getting a little hungry for Marquette basketball news and looking forward to talking about the team. So I felt it was appropriate to maybe at least check in with a little short podcast here, which has actually gone a lot longer than I thought we would.
Yeah, but that seems to be part of the course with us.
Yeah, we'll be talking Marquette Madness here pretty soon, and then we'll be actually breaking down the schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. It's getting exciting. We're getting into the autumnal months, which means basketball's basketball's ready to heat up. So we've got NFL to tide us over for now, but Marquette basketball will be hitting the court here in 3-4 weeks, and it's a good time to get a pot in, and then we'll come back in a couple of weeks and maybe really dig deep into the season to come.
Yeah, all right, so that's just about going to do it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. Again, we always appreciate hearing from you. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M0OF23. You can hit up the team handle at Cracked Sidewalks. Leave your comments on CrackedSidewalks.com, where we post the podcast. We have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs as well. And always please rate us and review us on iTunes. Download us there. Take us wherever you go. Phil, you have anything else to add?
Nope, just enjoy the football season until Marquette gets here.
They don't call him the best color analyst in the league for nothing, folks. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.